Hello and welcome to Chips of Chorlton, episode 32. I am joined by Andy, Duncan and Robin of the band Dutch Uncles, and we have a guest this week. Finally, we've managed to persuade someone to come and talk to us and eat chips.
Someone will have us.
Someone, you, and that man is the one and only Pete Marshall, everyone. Mandolin Pete.
Hi.
Pete Marshall.
Hi.
Hi,
Pete.
How are you doing? Hi, hey.
How are you doing, Pete? How
I'm
are you?
I'm very well.
How are you? Yeah. Yeah.
So I've been waiting at your window.
Really?
31 episodes to invite me in.
When are they gonna get us on? But yeah, so thanks for coming. You were the first musician in this room that were kind of in like the new Dutch Uncles rehearsal space.
Yes.
And you came round to check it out, didn't you?
I did, yeah.
Back in when my daughter was 2 months old.
Yeah. That's
yeah, exactly yeah, you came right. round to sort of scout out. It's like, should we rehearse in here? And you went, yeah, it's fine. So we did it, basically. So you are the person that gave us the green light to get going again, basically, Pete.
And does that mean I am responsible for putting my favourite band back together?
Oh, come on!
Does that mean I can...
Chips.
Yeah. I'm cheap.
Yeah, yeah, we needed a catalyst, didn't we? You know, it sort of was this room, or this outhouse, whatever you want to call it. Mm. We've got a... Yeah.
Yeah.
Not suitable for daytime listening name for it, but...
Yeah, sort of, yeah.
And to be fair, that's not a name that we've bestowed upon it either.
Neither have I. It was you guys that called it something extremely crude. So I'm not calling it like...
I think the name came out naturally, didn't it? It's listed on the album credits as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it's Aoife Studios, basically. It's named after my wife. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that doesn't sound too bad at all.
Aoife Studios, but yeah. So Pete, what...
That's not the crude name.
Are you suggesting we think your wife is crude?
No. Anyway, let's move on from my wife.
It's not crude. These chips.
Yeah, these chips. So not only do we have a guest on this week, we also have chips, which we have been lacking on the last few episodes. So we've gone to Burton Row Chippy, which is one of your favourites, Pete.
It really is, yeah.
Yep, and it hasn't disappointed, but we will come on to that in a minute. I just want to ask you, how things are going, Pete? Because you're like, what we were saying before, like a proper pop star almost, aren't you? I see you as
like a budget pop star.
A budget pop star, would you say? No, but it's not very, very often we have someone who's had a number one or played a number one record in the den this year. So congratulations for that.
In the den.
I called it by the
name.
No.
I didn't mean that about that. I just meant like that's the standard you hold of the den.
Yes.
You have your
how many times? Yeah.
We'll have to come in and disgrace ourselves.
So congratulations on that.
Thank you very much.
And how is it? How is it being a number one, being on a number one album? Because it's something that we probably will never know.
It's tough at the top.
Is it?
Let me tell you. Yeah, it's tough at the top.
I think you probably need to tell the listeners who aren't aware what that number one record was.
Oh. Right, it's the Pete Marshall Mandolin Moods Volume 5 solo album, available in all good bookshops. It's just a book. It's like a pamphlet.
Just a book.
It's a little pamphlet.
Is that right?
So I play for Paul Heaton.
Yep.
And Jackie Abbott. Paul is of House Martin's Beautiful South fame.
Yep.
And many a solo record that he's done, of which I've enjoyed doing a lot of them with him, of his solo stuff. I wasn't in the Beautiful South, and I wasn't in the House Martin's.
Well, I told my mum that you were.
No, sorry about that. I get, you know, I disappoint a lot of people when they think, oh, is
just
it?
Lost
no,
one
it's
listener.
Not him. Yeah, I've lost that. The listeners have gone. But, I mean, we've had an incredible run. You know, Paul's had an incredible career, and then I've enjoyed being a part of that, you know, his latter career.
Yeah.
We've had an amazing time.
So you've been playing with him for a decade or so, pretty much.
13 years.
13 years.
Unlucky for some.
Right, so that's 2009, just after.
Yeah.
Because you also played with Liam Frost.
I did two albums with Liam Frost.
Yeah.
That's how I cut my teeth, really.
Yeah.
And various other people.
Yeah.
That would have me in them. You know, I used to wander the streets of Manchester.
Just looking to drum for someone, basically.
Yeah, I'll play anything. Let me in your band. Just for chips.
Just for chips.
Well, this is how it starts. Okay.
This is how it starts. Yeah. So,
sorry, Andy.
It's all right. I'll just edge in. Start with a floor tom.
Be on the kit by the end of the night.
Yeah, both two drummers. I did that once. Yeah. It's a bit odd.
So let's start talking about right back at the beginning, Pete. I'm a really big Liam Frost fan. I kind of felt like I was stalking him sometimes. You're just sort of popping up and trying to talk to him and stuff. And he's obviously a very nice fella and would talk back. That was like the first time I saw you was as Mandolin Pete.
Really. Ah.
Mandolin yeah. Pete was sort of your original moniker, wasn't it?
It was.
Yeah.
Not Ukulele Pete.
Ukulele Paul I got.
Ukulele Paul. So,
Mandolin Pete was a name that found me.
Right.
Not the other way. I think a lot of people, because I always wonder this of Bono, The Edge, yeah. / myself. Well, did they suddenly hang out and say, I'm not going to be Paul anymore, I'm going to be Bono? And as a band just go, okay, Bono.
Yeah.
And funnily enough, I didn't pick Mandolin Pete.
No, who did then?
There was Liam had a little fan club.
Yeah.
Of quite early on, you know, he was like pretty hotly tipped in Manchester.
Yeah.
And he very quickly got traction and got fans, not friends, if you know what I mean by right. that. So prior to Liam, I'd been in my own unsigned band back in Rochdale with my friends and trying to make it
yeah.
as you do. And we could pack out the Academy 3 when they didn't let unsigned bands play there, which I was very proud of.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But the problem was, it was all friends and not fans.
Right.
And the weird thing with Liam was that I would then go and do... So for a time, I had a wife and a mistress. So I was very much dedicated to my own band. My own band was the wife.
Sorry. Oh, right. Yeah. Right. Whoa.
And Liam was my mistress.
Right, okay.
Thought we had a scoop there.
Yeah, a scoop. So
early as well.
Yeah, so early. Give me more chips.
About chips yet.
I'll tell all. And it was a bit odd and frustrating to me because I used to run a rehearsal room back in Rochdale. I used to sort of manage the band that I was in and put all my energy into it. And then with Liam, and I used to run a club night with this band called The Joy Formidable now, and they used to live in Manchester.
Yeah.
And me and the singer used to put a night on together.
Nice.
In Manchester, and she said, oh, you need to get Liam on your bill because you'll like him, and I didn't know anything about him.
Right, so that's how it started.
And he yeah. came and played this gig, and I watched his gig, and afterwards he sort of asked me to critique the performance and the stuff, and I was like,
how did he ask that?
Well, he just said, what did you think? And,
oh,
and I was
oh,
so
right. fair enough.
Sorry, no, but he really wanted me to.
Like,
sorry.
Can I ask you, what are the critiques?
Yeah. sorry.
Give me notes. Yeah.
And
yeah.
I need notes.
He definitely wanted more than me to say it. We're all right, that, mate.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he rang me up and he sort of said, so what did you honestly think of the band? You know, like, and he was keen for my opinion. And I said, I think your song, I was really blown away by his performance. But I said, I think you need to arrange your songs and get some players around it. He was like, right, so do you think you can do a better job? And I was like, wow. Mm. I mean, it's not my style to comment on a band like that. But I said, do you know what? I'll give it a go. So I said, how about... And then he said, why don't you just play drums? I was like, I'm sorry, I'm already married. and I said, but how about I put you a band together of people that I trust and I'll come in as a bit of an MD and we'll get your songs where I think they would need to be. I've never written Liam's songs. I'd hate it to be credited. Don't write his words. I'm not.
Yeah.
He's a fantastic songwriter.
Yeah.
But I was able to arrange them and realise them in a way that I thought would work.
Which any song in particular?
We started with Paper Boats,
yeah,
and there's
Paper
a song
Boats,
called
yeah.
Document.
Okay, I don't know that
I love
one.
No,
yet.
He won't play it. It's a bit emo.
Right. Because that was his past, wasn't
get
it?
Get your emo out.
Yeah,
of
yeah,
it
yeah, it was. Yeah, that was his thing, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, he was there.
The
by
Fringe didn't lie, did it? You know,
the Fringe was, he was proper emo.
He was there,
it was
wasn't he?
It was
and then
Fringe.
A song called
Paper Boats.
She Painted Pictures.
Yes, that
which
was
became
that was
his single.
The, yeah. That was the thing, wasn't it?
And If Tonight We Could Only Sleep.
Yeah.
They were the sort of, they were the songs that he had at the time. And I went up and met up with him at his mum's house. It was just in his bedroom, he was with a guitar, and we started like talking about ideas and stuff. And I was like, right, we'll get your band together.
Yeah.
And I had my own little rehearsal room, you know, in Spotland, in Rochdale. Ah. So he came down and he played with this band that I put him together. And I thought, this is sounding really, really good.
Yeah.
And we booked a little recording session in Rochdale at a friend of mine's studio called Studio Studio. Yeah.
No, cracking. There you go.
So good they named it twice. Pete's a legend. He did all Elbows demos when they were called Soft. He did an album with I Am Clue. He's like just old. He's been there a long time, and he's a bit of a legend really up there. People who know.
Yeah.
And I booked him with him. And on the morning of the session, Liam rung up and said, "Do you mind picking me up?" I went, "No problem." He went, "Do you mind putting your drums in the car?" And I was like, "Why?" He said, "I fired the band last night." And I was like, So he'd been working on this. We'd been working up this band. So I ended up going in and playing the drums on it, which he'd been oining me to do.
Yeah.
He'd been asking.
Grooming you.
He had, but I was like, "I don't know if I can be with you and be with the wife. I don't know how I feel about it." And anyway, I started working with him. But I still said, "Listen." Mm. And then as the songs developed, I thought, "We need to have a bit of violin on and a bit of mandolin."
Yeah.
I said, "I've got one under the bed. I used to play when I was at school. I'll come and map out some ideas, because I can read music and I can write music. I find it easier to write strings with my violin, then transcribe it, and then get someone decent to play it." The problem was, we met Ben Perry, who's a great drummer, and I was like, "He's really good, and he's a lot better looking than me. You need him in your band."
And just Ben Perry ended up answering machine
he ended
drummer.
Up in the answering machine is, and I was like, "We can't let him go. He's great, you know."
Yeah,
and So after we'd done this record and I'd put all these parts on, which we didn't replace, we just auto-tuned them. And I ended up with this strange character of man, which was really odd because I was still playing drums in my originals band, still trying to take on the world. And Liam, we could start at the Academy Free. Yeah. Liam, I was going doing these little duo gigs, just me and him, or with Sadie, would come and do a bit of vocals, just the three of us. And there'd be no one there, really. Or we'd do an open mic and there'd be a handful of people. Then very quickly, once this CD that we'd done got out there, he got offered like 4 record deals.
Yeah, so was that the CD that had She Painted Pictures on? I think I might have it upstairs.
Yeah.
I probably got the original down. And there's the original version of Try, Try, Try that's kind of knocking around as well.
That's on there.
Yeah, so I think I've got that demo.
Yeah, Is This Love's on there? And
I was knocking around at that time as sort of a you know, trying to do, you know, as we all were trying to be good at music. Yeah. And I remember there was
what do you mean
trying? Do you know you play guitar for now? Yeah. So I was, and I thought I was fucking great. When I'm not, I'm particularly average. And I realized, and I
so harsh.
But
what these boys say.
But I realized that when I saw Liam. Right, I think seeing Liam play, hearing that demo and seeing him play Early Doors, I realised that was the standard, basically. You know what I mean? It was a real kind of watershed moment. And then I kind of realised, it kind of opened my eyes a bit, like, oh, there's lots more bands around Manchester, obviously a lot better than the one I was in. So that was kind of the end. The beginning of the end, kind of when I realised, well, there's people better than me. I can't kind of get there. So it was really interesting to be around that at the time in Manchester, because you thought Liam was going to fucking smash it. And when the band surrounded him as the Slowdown Family, it just felt fucking hell, this is going to be massive, this.
Yeah.
And then it didn't. And this is a question I've always kind of wanted to pry into, is sort of, what are your reasons or your thoughts around that first record in particular? We'll come to the second one in a bit, but that first record, why do you think it didn't catch on?
I'd say it's the label, I really do, and the management, because it was a very new label, and they just made, in my opinion, and now I've sort of carried on, it's reaffirmed. So at the time of the band, I was 5 years older than Liam, and that felt like a lot older, because I'd already had friends that had deals and I'd already done bits of session stuff. He was like sort of 20, Sadie was 18, and I was 25, and I just felt like an old man. Part of the reason for being Mandolin Pete and trying to be on the side was, I thought, well, when my band gets signed, I'll be able to exit and these guys will be able to take off and they can replace me. Yeah. I'm not the drummer, I'm not going to be the too instrumental to the sound of the band, and I can just duck off. The Mandolin Pete thing, which was why we started this, was weird, because then everyone started chanting Mandolin Pete at gigs, which was odd. Yeah. Which was like I had a mad ego and wanted to be the front man. And it's not, it was the absolute polar opposite of what I was going for. Mm. I was trying to help Liam out. Thought his music was amazing.
Yeah.
And leave myself a way to get out, really, because I wanted to go and do my band. But at that time, I remember just thinking, there was things that didn't add up about the management. There was things right. that didn't add up about the label. And I actually questioned them, and they didn't appreciate that at all. I really hope that I'm not the sort of person who likes to be an expert on everything. And I don't want to call management or labels out. It's just not my style.
You're fine around these lot, by the way.
Was it because they didn't let it sort of grow organically? They try and force it in a particular direction?
I think this says it all. Was that Liam signed the deal. Because you've got to understand, Liam signed the deal, not the band. So it's very different to your band. I assume your band works. We were very much a hired hands. Mm. Even though we had a name, Liam signed the deal, Liam signed the publishing. They were Liam songs, so that's fair enough. And he did that all independent of us.
Okay.
And then I remember going to London to play the big show when he'd sort of signed the deal. And this was like, hang on, we're not an unsigned band now. We're going to London as a big sign machine. And after the show, Liam introduced me to the team, and I put my hand out to shake the manager's hand, and he left me hanging.
Oh, what?
Yikes.
Yeah.
Oh,
and
dear.
And that said a lot to me then. I was like, okay.
This is a problem.
I know. And then the EP that you talk about that we did in Rochdale came out.
Yeah.
And my name wasn't on it, and I didn't get paid. And I was like, and I remember saying to the manager, should my name be like on the EP,
because
I played the drums. Obviously Ben came in afterwards. I played the drums, I played bass on the song.
Ben's name on it? No.
Okay. Could have done that. It'd be good. He's a model, we need him on. We're trying to phase you out, mate. But like, I'd played a lot on it. I mean, oddly, I'd played a bit of keyboards on it. I am nowhere near as good as Sadie had done backing vocals on something.
It's just
that I was in the studio, heard these arrangements, Liam had just fired the band, and I was like, let's just get it all thrown together, because I was really excited. And with Liam's songs, I knew what I thought fitted quite easily, because the formula, it just made sense to me musically. So I dived on the keyboards, I played bass on a song, my friend of mine from school played bass on She Painted Pictures, I played violin, mandolin, and sang on it. And then it came out, and we got signed, Liam got signed, and I was like, alright, my name's not on it. And I remember saying to the manager, "What is that normal?" And he was like, "Your prize for playing on that record, your prize." Can you imagine?
What
saying
a bellend!
Yeah,
what
he's a London bellend. So he said, "Your prize for playing on that record is that you're in the best band in Manchester." To which I said, "Listen, son, goodwill doesn't fill my petrol tank."
Yeah.
Because the problem is, I'm quite passionately working class, and I'm not a working class hero. Mm. I'm not from a family that could support me financially, nor's Liam, by the way.
No.
So, and I was, and this was the other thing where I felt the age a little bit. A few of them had student loans, or they're in student digs, or I think Sadie was possibly still living at home. Mm. And I was still living with my dad, but that's a very complicated story. Mm. And I had an office job, so I was working. And if I didn't do that office job, I wasn't eating. It wasn't to try and make me feel more real. And that, it really drove a wedge, actually, with the band, because they offered us an awful gig fee, which is normal for new bands are expensive. Yeah. And I'm also not naive on that. Mm. Getting an artist like Liam to be a big artist costs a lot of money. So I wasn't thinking there was going to be a big wedge for me at all. But that was something very early on. So there was obviously, the money thing actually wasn't the problem. I just carried on trying to work a job whenever I could. And everyone did what they needed to do for their financial situation. Mm-hmm. But that not shaking my hand, basically, was the starting point for our entire relationship. There was no, because a lot of the fans, if I'm counting you as a fan, latched onto the thing that separated Liam out to other singer-songwriters. It was Liam Amber, and we were a bit like Mumford and Sons before Mumford and Sons.
Yeah.
Basically a load of characters with slightly oddball instruments.
Yeah.
There was a girl in the band. There was a guy with a hat on with a mandolin.
It
wasn't the same as your sort of Manchester indie band, where it was all guitars, metal band, emo band, whatever. And it also wasn't singer-songwriter with an acoustic guitar. But the management of the label didn't want to realise a value in that.
Yeah. That EP came out, and then I think Liam wrote Mourneth St. Paul, Cities at Standstill, kind of around the time of the album being written, because I hadn't heard those songs.
No, that's exactly right.
And then that was like, wow. When I heard the record, I was extremely underwhelmed. I think that's kind of where I've always sat with it. When I've got this EP,
yeah,
and it's fucking great, and then these new songs that he's written, they're fucking great. And then I get the album, and I'm like, it felt like it was... the sound had been turned down. It felt kind of...
not as raucous.
It felt like just, you know, the thing that made it really... there's no personality. I think that's what I'm trying to get across. There's no personality on that record. I was like, oh, fuck, I'm not sure what's going to happen here. You know what
I
mean?
Well, I think maybe they were trying to make him more radio.
Yeah.
One it would have been then. Or,
just, yeah.
I don't know. I listened to the album recently because I don't listen... like, I guess you lot don't. I don't listen to stuff that I'm on because you've done it. You listen to something else. I listen to Dutch Uncles.
You do, and he's a wide berth.
I listen to Big Balloon on full volume with the kids. They love it. Yeah, I really do. You think I'm lying.
I was on holiday a couple of months ago.
And,
one of those holidays, you know, you're in a hotel for a couple of weeks. You're going to end up befriending people that are in the place. And not that I ever put it out there of who I was, but it eventually sort of leaked out somehow. I don't know. But they tried to like do that thing where they trick you, but like start playing your songs at the bar.
Okay, yeah.
And I was like,
oh god,
shit.
Yeah.
But then immediately I was like, luckily they were playing just like the top five songs on Spotify, which is all like all the Big Balloon stuff.
The Paramore remix.
After the Paramore remix. After the Paramore remix.
Yeah.
How have they not heard of Chic? Anyway. After the Paramore remix, it was the Big Balloon songs, and thankfully, not the, you know, I was just like, it's been years since I heard it. I was like, actually, it sounds like I'm getting away with it here. I just have to detract away from the conversation to something else in the next four or five songs, maybe. And I'll be all right with it. But it's taken years to just get to that point of, it's been so long since I've actually listened to it. It's like, it's all right.
it's different though, isn't it? Because it brings back like... it's more than music, it's nostalgia, and it takes you back to that
time. Remember when you were writing it, or you remember when you were recording it.
Do you know the best thing about leaving it though is you forget about whether the floor tom was the right sound, did you miss a snare drum, or was your bass in tune, or was this the things that are bugging you when you're really over listening, which we are when we make albums, and the arguments about those things or the bad feeling about whatever it is that got changed. You actually forget about that.
Yeah, you do.
You completely forget about it. And then you can... it's the only time... it's really hard to listen to your own music as a fan would.
Yeah, it's impossible.
You can't, because you'd be...
the perspective you'll never have.
You're too involved in it to ever just have that. Wouldn't it be great if you could go to a Dutch Uncles gig and then think, well, do I like that? Is that the best thing? Because you're too in it. You can't ever go to your own gig.
So have you ever played for drums for someone you are a fan of? You know what I mean? Cause I suppose to be a bit of a fan, but I was obviously a fan of Dutch Uncles before I started playing guitar. You know what I mean? And I do have a different relationship listening back. Admittedly, as I've got the studio with it, it's a bit,
I mean, it sounds a bit naff, but Liam, I sort of became a fan of his writing. And like I said, I can't take any credit for that. And he'd write a song, and I'd just like a few of them. I'd be just crying as he was, because they're so raw. And it'd be me and him in some instances in his bedroom. And he'd be like, "What do you think of that?" And I'd be like, "It's really godly. I just need to run to the bathroom." Like I'd cry because his words are great, and he really does it.
Yeah.
So I mean, I'm fortunate. I've managed to do stuff with quite a few people. I'm fan, but I guess
that was Liam Frost and not Paul Heaton.
Well. Paul's a funny one, because I'll be dead honest, growing up he wasn't making music that I listened to at all, because like he was really topping the charts when I was 16, 17 and knew everything, and I was like, I had long hair then, and you wouldn't believe it now, but I had hair and it was long and I had two
and
I had two bass drums, not one, and I was a metal kid, so a Perfect 10 was on in every supermarket, in every shopping mall, on every radio station. You could not get away from that song. Yeah. It was everywhere. And I loved metal. So I was just like, well... just like, this is... What's this? This isn't for me at all. It's hilarious. But it's funny, because working for Liam, the difference between Liam and the band that I was in, before Liam, was that we were all a bit muso-y, probably, and not so lyric-based.
Yeah.
And Liam taught me to dig lyrics, because before that, I was probably a bit of a muso snob. I've always loved chord changes. I've always loved the relationship of notes and the suspense that it creates. So not necessarily always technical music for the sake of it. It's not always muso music, but the things I will like in a pop track will be quite muso-y nonsense. Yeah. That's the thing that I get very
cadence,
excited about.
Things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, baby.
Am I using that word right?
Which is why...
It's cadence.
Which is why I love you guys. Yeah? But I love the play and the you know... We toured with Squeeze. Check out Squeeze for chord progressions. Oof. Just fantastic. Just amazing. I could listen... The way they put a song together, really great. And I love that.
Even the middle eight of Cool for Cats.
Oh yeah, that's great.
I mean, yeah, it is great. It's a bit catty, but it's great.
It's a bit jazzy. Anyway,
who knew?
Come away from Cool for Cats. That's the hit. Go and delve into some other stuff.
Yeah.
But the transition from being in my band, and then Liam was, words actually really matter. In fact, words can really sell a song. In fact, that's the thing I should be focusing on. And then meeting Heaton, he's the master of it.
Yeah.
He really is master of words. And he looks at me when I say it, like, shut up. And I'm like, yeah, but... Because he's not Bukowski, is he? He's not fancy with his words. He says very, very identifiable with things. They're not clever.
Yeah.
They're not trying to be clever. Yet they are clever. Because if you try and say something as ordinary as he says in a song, it won't sound as good.
Yeah.
He's brilliant at it.
Yeah.
So I've become a fan of Paul's. It's funny. By working with him, but it's just like he's amazing at it. He's not, you know, he's quite interesting to work with. But so, I mean, it's weird. I've become fans of loads of people that I've got to work with rather than maybe being asked by one of my heroes.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
And what you've said in that passage there.
Yeah.
Two questions.
Yeah.
One, you were metal.
I was metal.
Now that you're playing the Enormodomes,
yeah,
surely you have a double bass pedal. just in there.
Yeah, it's going like I don't want to say anything because we are going to go on tour in a few weeks, but it's going to be proper.
It's coming out.
It's going to be.
It's going to be like.
It's going to be serious.
When you're playing actual arenas, even if it's just for your sound check, you're like gonna. Can I just give this a go for a minute?
The truth is, I'm too old and I can't do it anymore. If you ever tell...
I thought it was the whole point of having a double pedal. It was like half the energy.
You know, 32 notes in the middle eight, perfect 10 or something on the bass drum.
And some screams.
I was going to give you a second question. How does it feel playing... Is perfect 10... I mean, I don't want to give away any of the set.
It's all right. We've played it a lot over the last year.
I was going to say, I can imagine...
Go to a Paul Heaton, Jack Gabbett gig and you don't play that.
It's not exactly asking if you're playing the Japanese B-side. So, what is it like now playing like songs of that calibre? You know, especially ones that you've grown up around.
It's funny, isn't it? It's like... Yeah, it's funny. I should say the bass player who plays with us now is the singer.
Chris
Wise.
Yep.
He is the singer I cheated on with Liam. He's my wife.
Okay.
This is a strange turn of events.
So his
band were called The Hidden
Revolution.
So we had them, we did a track by track podcast of The Hidden Revolution about 15 years ago.
Really?
Yeah, this is when podcasts...
You did a podcast 15 years ago?
I'm honestly not joking, remember...
Was this when you were on Chilton FM and Pete came on and swore straight away?
This is before Chilton FM. We just did a track-by-track podcast.
Amazing.
That's funny.
With Chris. Oh, I think you were there, Andy. I think you did that podcast with us. Or mate, I don't know. Yeah, definitely. I think... I'll dig it out and I'll send it to you.
You need to.
But I was a really big fan of...
bangers.
When I was 16 in that band, and we were called Change Nothing, which on reflection sounds like a very bad band name. But at the time, you know, when you just have a band name and it's just your band name, and I hadn't thought of like a message. It was just two words that I thought, I didn't think. But now it's like, what did that mean? Anyway, that was the band that I was in.
Strange coincidence there. I work for a production music company. And that has an album that was recorded by the Hidden Revolution on it, a very early album on our production music label.
It could be.
Really?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was by the Hidden Revolution.
Yeah. It'll be wise. It'll be wise. Yeah. He's sneaking his music into stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So just want to just step back one last thing on Liam. First album came out, didn't do well. You got that second record, didn't he?
Yeah.
That was recorded in New York.
Yeah.
Did you go and play drums on that in New York?
I did.
We were talking about this before, weren't we?
Right, step back a bit.
No, I mean, but we were just saying that.
He's pointing people. He's pointing right in Pete's face.
Yeah,
I was like,
was that you?
That's got to be great, though.
I had a fight with Ben.
Oh,
he's
right.
He's too beautiful. Yeah. No, I didn't really. He can't. Yeah,
surely rock, paper, scissors at the airport. Yeah, so it's anyway. So it's truly deep.
Well, had Ben already joined Answer Machine by then and then decided,
He was joining. So what happened with that album, it was really frustrating. We went and recorded it. We went down to London. It felt like a big experience. It felt like all the things I wanted to do with Wisey in our little band that were happening all of a sudden. And without all the effort, you know, from my point of view, it was like, wow, we've been fighting and not having this. Went to London. It was really, really great.
Yeah.
Then the label were just umming and ahhing about what they were going to do with it. And for like 9 months. And as I said, I had to work and I'd quit. Mm. So we got offered a tour with Elbow, who I adore. You know, I love
and
Elbow.
And I saw you in Liverpool on that show. It's probably one of my top 10 shows ever, Liam Frost supporting Elbow. And Elbow playing in Liverpool Academy, I think. I just remember Elbow playing Newborn, and it's like the whole crowd was like, fucking wow. You know what I mean? So
it's just before they went crazy, because
it was Leaders
of the Free World, so it was before, Sovereign Scene Kids.
Yeah.
But I had to quit my job. I went and saw my boss,
right,
and I was like, been asked to go on tour with Elbow. And they were like, yeah, you've used all your holidays. Mm-hmm. And I was like, how does that work? And he was like, how old are you? I was like, 25. And he went, you hand your notice in and you call me up when you're 40 and you've been a pop star and I give you a job back.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. But he basically pushed me. But it was really scary because I didn't have financial stability at all.
Mm.
And all I had in the diary was 3 weeks on the road with Elbow and going to London to make Liam's album.
Right. Okay.
And that was it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it was a bit like, oh God, you know, I'm giving up a job. And I wanted to do it. Of course I did. But I'd spent my holidays going, we were talking about the Water Rats before, where I played about 3 weeks ago, which is lovely. But we did a residency at the Night and Day Cafe and at the Water Rats.
Yeah.
And I'd spent all my holidays that period doing any promo, bit of Water Rats. We were talking about driving back, getting in at 5, going in the office
straight
at 9,
to work,
horrible. But I'd spent my holidays doing that, so I quit it to go and do the elbow show and to do that. Right. Then I was really fortunate. I got picked up by Stephen Fretwell to go and tour with him.
Yeah.
So I didn't play any of his albums. Played a bit of violin on one of his tours, which sort of got me through. Then there was a girl called Karima Francis who just got a record deal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She needed a tour manager / drummer / violinist, which I did all those roles. So I went and did a tour with her. And then when we'd done those Water Rat shows, Liam Frey was supporting as Liam Frey.
Right.
And then he formed the Cortinas.
Here we go.
In that summer. Yeah.
It always comes back to that, doesn't it?
We were talking about them on the last episode.
Yeah, yeah.
So here it comes.
By the way, Pete, sorry, help yourself to more chips, by the way.
I will.
I've got my eye on him. I know I'm battering you with questions. It's great stuff. But if you are hungry, just fucking tuck in, mate.
Is there more curry, though?
There is.
I drink it, though.
Otherwise,
he could drink it. It's like a soup.
Otherwise, Robin will just drink it, basically, if you do it.
Stick a few on.
Go on.
For the listeners, I'm putting chips on a plate.
It's like ASMR if you do it in front of the microphone.
They're a little bit cold. I don't know how I feel about that. I'll just pop a few on it. I've dropped a few in my lap.
It's land on your bastard lap.
Jump, put the curry straight on your lap as well.
I wouldn't mind, darling.
I'm loving this regional ASMR.
I'm a very regional man.
It sounds like What's that band? The Lancashire Hot Pots.
Robin is just pouring the curry jus.
Put the microphone over that.
Oh, you need to get it. Is it Sean Pertwee that does it? Oh.
Yeah, so sorry. And you are eating now.
No, this is good.
It interrupts the conversation.
Can the listeners tell? What size chips in my mouth?
Yeah, so Karima Francis. Drum for her as well.
Did a tour with her, and then the Cortinas were really in their infancy. So I lent Campbell a kit because he didn't have a drum kit,
right?
And then I did a little bit of work with them, sort of early doors, going in, just helping them out really because they were just finding their feet. Mm. And then I did a tour with them playing violin. That was nice, good fun, and all these little bits. Sort of, well, they stopped me having to go back to a job.
Yeah.
I just about sort of covered my back.
Yeah.
By which time, so for some members of the Slowdown family, they were just lost without anything to do. Some of them went back to uni.
Yeah.
Ben did form, he got asked to join Answering Machine.
He beat the machine. He actually overtook an electric drum machine. That never happens. It always goes the other way.
It always goes the other way. He's that good.
Yeah.
He's that good. And then, so when Liam was sort of regrouping, the label just couldn't decide, basically. They put out a single, and then they were like, do we pump a load of money into it and do a big thing and buy onto a tour or whatever they were going to do? And they just ummed and ahed for too long. And then they suddenly said, we got it. Let's scrap a Slowdown family. Let's make Liam a solo artist and go to New York and make a record that way. Which I was pretty sad with at the time.
Yeah.
And by which time I was like, I mean, this is going to be an amazing experience.
Yeah.
But you're going to end up with a load of debt and they'll want to get rid of you quicker because...
Is it actually debt he has to pay off, though? Because...
Yeah. So it's like, I mean, physically, no. There's no, like, bailiffs around at his house.
So it's not really debt.
But it's a debt that's attached to your name, which then means that you would be... faster to drop off the label, wouldn't you?
It's like a sort of musician credit rating, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
If you're like 100k in the hole and you're looking for a new label and you know they know that, then it's not going to happen for you, is it? And like you say, you know, more of an incentive to drop you.
We were talking earlier about, as you say, about Water Rats and about other bands around Manchester of the time of coming through in the new Mancunia movement of the late noughties to early tens. And Delphic came up, obviously. Acquaintance? Yeah, I'll just say friends.
Colleague.
Yeah, I'll just
go for it. Treat yourself.
No, I was looking for a more of a business term in it, just for the context, but just mutual friends. And we were talking about, like, I remember one conversation constantly having with them from time to time was about the nature of, you know, trying to make it as a musician and doing all that. Be like, oh yeah, when they would ask, like, oh, so how's the band going? It's like, yeah, it's all right, but I'm broke as fuck. It's like you guys must be doing well. I was like, yeah, but we got lots of debt.
Yeah.
And in my head, I was like, no, you haven't. The bailiffs aren't coming round. Like, it ain't happening. Like, that is not debt. It just means
it's not a career then. You know, it hangs over. It's not
yeah,
a career.
No, but
you,
got, know,
you
but,
might be you might be successful elsewhere, but that name.
And yeah, yeah, and here we are in now 2022. Who's laughing?
I don't know.
It's not me. I mean, I am laughing. Not a thought like I would.
I know what you mean. I think it just means that when they have those little meetings around the table about who to keep, one of the factors is
debt.
We had that publisher, didn't we? We were trying to find out, so would you like to take on the next album? And that took about 3 years, didn't it? They were like, God, well, you are 40k in the hole. You keep saying this and I don't know what it means. It's like, show me what that looks like.
That's the only real annoyance we've ever had over the sort of big institution. I suppose it was a biggish publisher for us. But it's just the directness that we missed. We just wanted to be told.
Yeah.
If we're dropped, fine, but just tell us. Maybe the meeting about it is going to be in 6 months' time when they get, you know, because they've got bigger fish to fry and they're busy and it's a small staff or whatever, you know, but it's just like, you just need to know so you can get on with it.
It's the whole money ball thing, isn't it? Six in the stomach, one in the head.
Exactly.
One in the head, everything.
Yeah. There was a label change, wasn't there? Was that a kind of who he was sound? He was on Sony anyway, wasn't he? And the La Volta label.
I think
label.
It was Columbia.
Columbia, but that's what
I might get it wrong because, as I said, it wasn't my deal, but. Basically, they were a subsidiary, and they were brand new. Liam was their first signing,
right?
And then they decided that they'd given the subsidiary 2 or 3 years of funding. And they decided that all they'd done in that time was get a load of debt.
Right, yeah.
So they said, actually, we're going to bring you in-house. So, and that will bring your artists
as well
with you. So they brought us sort of into Columbia. I'm sure it was Columbia. If Liam listens to this, he will correct me.
Yes.
And our A&R guy, who'd been one of the bosses at the subsidiary label, went with us. We went off to New York, made this album, had a fantastic time. Of course, it was amazing.
Yeah.
And then he flew out to see us doing stuff. And then he got home and got the sack.
So he got back.
He got back to London.
London, and they decided and they were like, to drop him.
See you later. And then I think it was as simple as they sort of went round the table and said, "Oh, he's gone. Does anyone want his belongings? You know, Liam. Does anyone want to pick him up?" And they sort of had a listen and went, "Not really.
Yeah,
not that bothered." Because you need someone at the label to be like, "No,
champion you, don't you?"
Yeah, you do. Yeah, somebody who's going to put their neck on the line to say, "No, we can make this band."
Yeah,
I remember when I first heard about Liam Frost, it was because we went to school with Sadie.
Yep.
So like, I remember thinking that it was a bit of a buzz, but it might have just been because we knew her. And I remember I remember my sister going to watch Liam Frost and Slowdown Family, and she came back from the gig. She's like, "It was amazing. It was like a Disney film. It was incredible." And then, I didn't feel like it exploded in the way I thought it was going to.
No,
after hearing all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
There was just loads and loads of hype. But I remember I got spotted walking down Oldham Street, and it was like, wow, this guy's really known. I mean, it wouldn't have happened anywhere else, you know what I mean? But it was that thing where it was like, hang on, are we actually, is this happening?
It must have been a hell of an In the City for you.
Yeah, baby.
where'd you play?
It was like
Teasers.
Who's that of the music scene? But where did we play for In the City?
I mean, we got laughed at by professionals. we played after Friendly Fires at Squares Bar, which is now Revolution de Cuba. In case anyone's wondering.
Beautiful accent.
Thank you. I've been working on it. But I specifically recall old men, like, literally hitting their knees with laughter.
Putting their wallets away.
Putting their wallets away and going, "What a bunch of stupid twats." And thinking, "This is fine."
There was a producer there who said he'd work with us, and he'd done some like mid-sized indie bands. And I remember saying to him, "It's like, oh yeah, so we'll get some dates booked in." He's like, "Yeah, maybe."
Oh my god, that guy! I remember him. He looked like I'm trying to think of a character from Peep Show, but the series is too late. But he was very tall, wasn't he? With a leather jacket and. Had he worked with Boy Killed Boy? Was that it?
I don't know. Something like that. Very mid-sized indie band.
Yeah, what are them jobbies? Yeah.
I mean, we were like 18 at the time, and we thought it was the be-all and end-all. Like, oh, we have to get a deal off this gig, surely.
I wasn't used to feeling desperate until when we were trying to court that guy. Actually, now that you've refreshed my memory, that was definitely a low.
It feels a bit name-droppy, but I went out for a drink with Simon Williams, who runs Fierce Panda.
I was about to say, who?
He runs Fierce Panda record label.
Yeah.
And we were talking about that. I was talking about, because I was sort of flirting with him, with the old band, with Wisey, about getting a single out. And they sort of touched, everything they touched went to gold, really.
I remember that, yeah.
So they signed Cut Keen, they signed Coldplay.
So, Block Party, did they do?
Yeah, Block Party.
Yeah, and yeah, so my... my band I was in, the only real label interest we had was from Fierce Panda. And there's two people there, aren't there? And one of them liked it, one of them didn't, basically. So
okay.
we never got it. We had that going ticket.
That was the carrot.
That was the carrot. Yeah. Well, we had there. Well, the guy, I think it might have actually even been Simon, said he liked it and his business partner didn't. But we went to London to do this gig.
Yeah.
And we basically said, well, this is it if we do not get signed off.
What
this
was their?
Gig,
did they have their own club night? What was that called? Was
Club
that,
Fandango?
Club Fandango. That's, yeah, that's what we were saying about night and day stuff on the last podcast. All those stuff.
We did miss off an iconic venue, actually. I thought about this.
Iconic in Manchester venue.
We were talking about the night and day situation on the last episode.
Yeah, yeah. Depressing.
Actually, it'd be good to get your 2 pence on it.
Yeah.
But one, we were talking about other iconic venues and the cyclical nature of it all. And one we had actually forgotten was Star and Gutter.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, it wasn't really
you
like
100% right.
Me and
Liam,
was it regular gig venue?
We would have met you in there because we used to always go out to was it Smile?
Yeah, we went there all the time.
I used to go there.
What was the one that was on Friday? Shake It, Shake It.
And well, they changed it up all the time. Keys Money Lipstick was one. Shake It, Shake It was one. Then they did the whole kind of nothing but the 90s or nothing but the noughties. Yeah, it all started to get a little bit more too conceptualized, I think.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking then.
Yeah.
My two penny from The Night and Day.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, why would you move in the Northern Quarter and want peace and quiet? Mm. Go and live in the hills.
Yeah, I mean, this is what we'd say.
Yeah, it's
just the venue's been there a long time, but it's also odd, isn't it? I think it's difficult. It's difficult if you've been so tunnel visioned as what we probably have. I'm assuming you're like me, where you got so enticed by this music industry, and you lived next to a great city like Manchester, where actually dreams could come true because bands did get signed. Mm. There's people who live a lot further. You were just south of the city. I was just north of the city. It was all very sort of tangible. You end up with these venues that mean a lot to you because they're where you cut your teeth. Mm. And I guess I was slightly digressed, but not much. I got to play CBGB's, which I was very excited about.
Ooh, yeah.
6 months before it shut.
Nice.
And a good friend of mine, he lives in New York. He's lived there since the 90s. And he was like, oh, that place was dead anyway.
Yeah.
So nobody went there anymore. Because I messaged him when I heard it shut, going, oh, man, this is terrible. It shut. He went, is it?
Yeah.
He said, Blondie wasn't playing there. Television weren't playing there. All these bands that are supposed to have, the Ramones, obviously, all these bands that had this real heyday moment in the early 80s, late 70s, the venue actually hadn't found a new...
Yeah,
it hadn't found its new blood.
Maybe to its detriment, these venues fall into like legend categories.
Yes,
It's probably a bad thing. I was thinking like when Night and Day got mentioned on Lost.
Yes,
like a producer's probably just Googled famous venues in Manchester, and that's the top one.
Yeah,
and and that's it never reinvented itself. And well, like I say, it's just legendary.
It
but
is,
isn't current.
It's weird, isn't it? I mean, I don't know how busy it is. Because I've got too old to go out to club nights and watch young bands.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
That's the problem. So I am not that kid that hangs out there anymore. Because I was there every week.
Yeah.
There was February in 2006 or 5. I think I held the record for playing at Night and Day. Because Liam had a record residency and we played there 4 times in February. I used to play in a band called Bonebox. Jay, who used to book there,
that was Jay Taylor. Yeah, of course.
We played in it, so that's 5 times. Change Nothing played twice, that's 7 times. I used to play for someone called Loose in the Caterpillar, that's 8 times.
Yeah.
They all played in February. I remember going in like thinking maybe I should get my own little bedroom.
Yeah.
It just felt like I was always there. So I lived at that place, really, in that sort of. Early millennium, I played with a lot of bands, and that's where we played. So, it makes me personally very sad to see it under trouble. It shouts a wider problem of music venues, doesn't it?
Yeah,
so if that one bites the dust, it's just this thing about you need to understand if music makes a city great, then don't shut the music down because then it won't be great.
Mm-hmm.
And Liverpool suffers the Beatles, and what I mean by that is it had this fantastic band that has eclipsed anything else that's come from it. Manchester did have Manchester, it did have Stone Roses, it did have The Smiths, it did have Joy Division.
It's in the shadow of Oasis, I'd say, still. Because everyone's waiting for them to get back together.
It is, but I've just reeled off loads of bands that it's in the shadow of.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's the only saving grace for Manchester is.
There are quite a lot. Yeah.
There's quite a lot.
And an unspoken part of Manchester's legacy, and this is one bit of it that I think I cherish the most, really, is that, especially if you're lucky enough to kind of develop your senses musically within the parameters of the city like we have been.
Yeah.
You begin very impressionable, young, thinking of, being attached to certain bands. And then as you get older, you start to realise what was great about the other bands.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden it becomes so much harder to go, well, which one, it's a stupid conversation to have because it's relatively pointless. But, when it comes to like, well, who was the best band?
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know, I couldn't tell you. It probably feels more like, I don't know, Happy Mondays or John Cooper Clarke at this point or something like that, as opposed to like Joy Division or The Smiths. But that's obviously not how it works. It's just incredible how each of them have something different to offer to you in a different part of life, almost.
Sure.
And also you can revisit the older ones, of course. And, yeah. Well, maybe less so Morrissey. I mean, you know, on the obvious
now
things.
Disgraced Morrissey.
I just kind of find him a bit silly now. You know, it's just like a daft, you know, like a daft old relative. Know.
Yeah, who you don't want to talk to.
Yeah, yeah. And whose music solo I certainly won't play publicly. Yeah.
Use those words anymore. It's Tuesday.
I think maybe episodes like 15 to 25 of this podcast were basically spent slagging off Morrissey. So.
Yeah,
pretty much.
Yeah, yeah. And also praising Kanye. Well, maybe at my end, just go, genius, man's genius.
Well, let's take a break here, and then we'll review these chips, and then we'll go
deep
after that. Yeah, let's take a break here. So that's the end of part one of our podcast with Pete Marshall. Pete was here for a good couple of hours, and we don't want to cut too much out of it. So we're going to split this into two. The plan is to get the second part out next week, and then at the start of the second part, we review the chips from Burton Road Chippy. So that's definitely worth the wait. So thank you very much. As usual, any comments, any questions, please tweet @ Chips of Chorlton, and we will speak to you soon. Thank you.